Welcome to The Point on WCAI. I'm Catherine Iden, filling in for Sean Corcoran. This is our weekly news roundup, where we'll discuss some of the top local news stories of the week with some of my colleagues in the print and digital media. Joining me here in our Woods Hole studio is Jeff Spillane, a reporter at the Cape Cod Times. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Catherine.
Thanks for being here. Joining us on the phone a little later, we'll have Ryan Bray from the Falmouth Enterprise, Sarah Brown from the Vineyard Gazette, Cameron Machel from the Martha's Vineyard Times, and we'll check in with Ann Wood from the Provincetown Banner and Tim Wood of the Cape Cod Chronicle. But first, let's take a look at some of the news here on the Cape and Islands that was featured in the Times this week. Mm-hmm. The state's highest court is hearing arguments over whether a Hyannis nonprofit can give needles to patients.
That's right, Catherine. This is an issue that's been now in its third calendar year. The AIDS Support Group of Cape Cod has been operating a needle access program out of its office on Sell Street in Hyannis. In 2015, the town of Barnstable gave a cease and desist order saying, you don't have approval to do this here. The folks at the AIDS Support Group, with some legal backup from organizations in Boston, such as the GLAAD, the Gay and Lesbian Advocates and Defenders, as well as the AIDS Action Committee, said, well, yeah, we do. In 2006, for all intents and purposes, possession of needles was decriminalized. At that point, you could go in, if you're 18 years and older, and buy needles at a pharmacy. And a lot of that was done to certainly stem the tide of the rising number of HIV and hepatitis C infections. But also on the books, and this is the town of Barnstable's argument, is a law that was created in 1993, still on the books, that said if you want to have it, and they refer to it as a needle exchange program, you must go through the Department of Public Health, and in order for you to do that, you must receive local approval. So really, what's happening here, and a judge in Barnstable in late 2015 did issue a preliminary injunction and said, okay, you can stay open until we figure this out. The two parties decided, you know what, it's better that we go to the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court to just take this to the highest court in the state, and they did that this week. Both parties argued why it should be open and why it should be closed, and it was very interesting. The AIDS Support Group of Cape Cod said, "Hey, you know what? There's nothing that prevents a nonprofit from doing this." Non-public entity. The only reason that 1993 law is on the books is so that any type of a public needle dispensary would have the agreement with the town. The state just wants to have a good relationship. On the other side of the argument, the town said, no. That was only put into place because there are too many prosecutions, too many people being jailed for this, and that's why that was done in 2006. One of the Supreme Court judges, I believe it was Justice Margot Botsford, finally said after a half-hour argument, you know, this may very well be for the legislature to figure out. So we don't know what's going to happen here, whether the court will render a decision, which they tend to do within 120 days. So it may not be until June that we know about this, although they're hoping it will be a little bit sooner. They could render a decision, or they could kick it back to the legislature to say, hey, you know, clean up these two laws that are on the books.
Right. They do seem to kind of offer enough ambiguity that both sides are making strong arguments.
Oh, very strong. Very strong.
Yeah. So we'll be keeping an eye on that story. Well, we have a stretch of calm, sunny weather ahead for us as we head into the weekend. But some stormy conditions over the past few weeks have really done a number on Cape beaches.
They really have, Catherine. And we thought the winter was going to go smoothly, but there was an active winter weather pattern here in the last 2 weeks. Once again, these storms have taken their toll on the Cape beaches and in a lot of familiar places, I may add. Down at the Cape Cod National Seashore, the stairs at Marconi Beach and Wallfleet have been washed away. And there's also some damage to stairs at Nauset Light Beach in Orleans. There's some sand underneath. They're hoping, and these both of these sets of stairs have been repaired in the past. So they're hoping that the damage can be fixed, and our summer visitors can use the stairs to get to the beach. Also in Provincetown, the Herring Cove parking lot continues to buckle. as we've seen in other places around the Cape during storms. I remember after Hurricane Sandy, it was horrible, and Mashpee took out most of the parking lot. Herring Cove has 208 spaces, and as of this last storm, only 55 could be used. But there is a plan to fix this parking lot in 2018. And if we're talking about storm damage, we'd have to talk about Town Neck Beach and Sandwich. It's the first place Boston TV trucks go whenever the wind starts to blow.
Oh, I mean, I saw some footage this week from a drone, and it is. It's incredible. And that beach, as so many beaches do, it just gets pounded in these storms.
It does. It does. And we had some folks out there that took some video as well. It was wild. But there has been additional damage there, primarily to the dunes. And we have learned that the U.S. Geological Survey is working with the town. They were out there this week to try to put together some plans with the town for some erosion control efforts. And it just seems to take a big bruising there on the north side of Cape Cod Bay.
Yeah. And, of course, do we hear this every winter or every storm? We hear about erosion. And I think it will be interesting to see. I know there's work out there to maybe make a set of removable stairs for one of the beaches.
There is. And that makes perfect sense. And you see that in a lot of private homes as well here on the Cape and Islands.
Compromise with Mother Nature.
Yeah, exactly.
And immigration, turning now to immigration, it's, of course, been a huge story. There's been a lot of conversation nationwide over the last several weeks about immigration and how we're going to deal with it as a nation. And several stories with a local angle were featured in the paper this week. But let's talk first. Police on Martha's Vineyard reissued a pamphlet to kind of calm people down and reassure them.
They did. And we do have a large immigrant population here on the Cape year-round. I recently covered a program in Hyannis, which was a similar effort to calm the fears of some immigrants. And, of course, a large immigration population does come here to work in the summer. But over in Oak Bluffs on the vineyard, the police did reissue that pamphlet. And they wanted to make it clear to the immigrant population there, legal or not legal, that we're here to protect public safety. We're not here to enforce immigration laws. And it really did quite a bit to calm some of the nerves and lessen the anxiety of this particular community. And one of the police officers, I believe he was a captain over there, said there's been a bit of hysteria on the island, as there has been in Hyannis. And one thing that I found very interesting, if not disturbing, that I want to say January 20th, there's some victims of domestic violence on the island that have been afraid to come forward, fearing deportation. And the Oak Bluffs police wanted to say, no, first and foremost, we're here to help you seek justice. So don't worry. We're not going to be carrying out the activities of ICE. And they also said, we have no idea whether we have not heard any plans for ICE to come to the island.
Right. I mean, so much of this has been talk, and of course it does inspire real fear, but it's not like we've actually seen action yet.
Very, very, very fearful.
And yet the Times had another story this week that really talks about the impact of if you're here and you're working, whether legally or not, if you're working under the table, which people often do, or if you don't have health insurance, there can be some really expensive ramifications to that.
Yeah, something that you really haven't thought about, and this came to light in January, Catherine. It was after the first major snowstorm we had here on the Cape. About 16 men from New Bedford looking for day work came to the Cape. They were going to be paid $180 a day to shovel snow. I'm guessing it was at a condominium complex somewhere on the Upper Cape here. Some were legal, some were not. After a hard day of work, and we all know how hard shoveling snow can be, the van that was taking them back to New Bedford was involved in a very serious accident in Falmouth on Route 151. 11 of the 16 men that were in the van were injured. Some fairly seriously had to be transported to Boston. Now, these men who were just looking for a day's work are faced with some major hospital medical bills. Don't know how they're going to pay for them. Very vulnerable group
Many
here.
Of them young, too.
Many of them very young. And I notice also this is New Bedford is seeing a lot, an influx of immigrants from Central America as
yes.
well. So these mostly Spanish-speaking. They work under the table without any type of employee status, no health insurance. And believe it or not, some don't even know who's paying them. They just have word of mouth says, if you wanted some work today, come and meet at a certain place and get in the van. So they are reaching out to what's called the Community Economic Development Center in New Bedford, where they're trying to help some of the victims. Many of the victims did not want to be identified for this particular story, which appeared in the New Bedford Standard Times, for the same fears that we just talked about in Oak Bluffs. That they don't want to face any type of immigration issues. But yes, this is something that we probably wouldn't have thought a lot about until recently.
Yeah, it really kind of, the national conversation just kind of makes you look toward your into your own community and think a little differently.
It does. It does. It certainly does.
Let's turn now to some news from the Mid and Lower Cape. Joining us on the phone is Tim Wood of the Cape Cod Chronicle. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning, Catherine.
Well, you got a story this week. Harwich officials published a primer for residents about something that all Cape Town officials are dealing with, wastewater. Why did they do that?
Indeed. Well, at this upcoming town meeting in Harwich in May, they'll be facing their first major appropriation for wastewater infrastructure. And they want to make sure that voters in Harwich are as educated as possible about the issue. So they've published this 12-page primer that lays out what needs to be done to improve water quality in the town's estuaries and embayments, the issues that we've been talking about for the last 5-6 years or more now. And but this this booklet really delves deeply into the reasons behind the decline in water quality, with maps that show how the growth of the town has the growth the town has undergone in the past half century has impacted this. It includes easy to understand illustrations about how excessive nutrients can lower water quality, and it provides a watershed by watershed guide as to how the town proposes to fix these problems. Now, there's also a detailed financial chart for people who are so oriented, showing how much each of the projected 8 phases of the Harwich project will cost over more than 30 years, and that's a total they're estimating of some $230 million, and it also estimates the tax impact. Now, phase one of the project is already underway, actually, and included the Muddy River Bridge that Harwich and Chatham jointly built this past year, which improved water quality in Muddy River and reduced the need to sewer there, and a few other small projects that Harwich is doing. But in May, the first big appropriation, $34 million, will be sought, and that's to build sewers in East Harwich. And that money also includes more than $6 million that Harwich will be paying to Chatham to use excess flow that Chatham has at its sewer treatment plant here, so that that sewage from East Harwich is going to be treated at the Chatham plant. Mm. Now, officials hope that this brochure is going to answer a lot of the questions and make the town meeting vote go a bit smoother, but they expect that there'll be more questions as the project moves along. Now, this the brochure is available to download from the town's website, and they'll also be distributing this through local civics groups and in the schools as well.
Mm, some homework for residents there as they get ready for upcoming
Indeed.
Town meetings. Also in the news, and just briefly, it is the 65th anniversary of the Pendleton Rescue. That's the story of one of the most heroic Coast Guard rescues in U.S. history, which happened right off the coast of Chatham. And there's some special events related to this anniversary.
Indeed. Tomorrow, February 18th, is that 65th anniversary. During the day, 3 o'clock tomorrow, the Chatham Historical Society will be hosting a special presentation of a documentary that was actually made by the producers of the film The Finest Hour, which we know is all about that rescue. But the producers put together this documentary specifically for the society in thanks for their help when they put the film together. And it's interviews and information from people who were actually there. And there will also be a panel discussion with some of those same folks. And this event is a benefit for the society. It's going to be held at their Stage Harbor Road Museum, and you can visit their website, ChathamHistoricalSociety.org, for more information and to make a reservation.
Well, thanks, Tim Wood. That is Tim Wood of the Cape Cod Chronicle. Thanks for calling in. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Catherine. You too.
We have to go to a break, but we'll be right back with more on The Point's weekly news roundup. I'm Catherine Ident. Welcome back. This is the news roundup on The Point, and we're discussing the top local news stories of the week. I'm Catherine Ident, filling in for Sean Corcoran. And with me in our Woods Hole studio is reporter Jeff Spillane from the Cape Cod Times. Good morning, Jeff. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Catherine.
Well, some Cape businesses are worried as they're getting ramped up for the start of the summer season. It seems far away, but it really isn't if you're a Cape business person. There's some red tape surrounding H-2B visas that could cause some problems.
It certainly could, Catherine. And this is a time when Cape and Island business owners to start really diving in and planning for the summer. In December, Congress ended a long-time exemption for returning foreign workers who come here through the H-2B visa program. Now, all of these employees must reapply, and it's a long, long process. It's got a lot of business owners here in the Cape and Islands worried. And part of the new order is there's only 66,000 H-2B visas employees are going to be allowed in per year. This kind of breaks down 33,000 in the winter, 33,000 in the summer. Last year, the Cape and Islands had 3,101 visitor workers here. And, you know, the exemption allowed a lot of long-time returning employees just to reapply and come right back in. Not the case this year. And so this is going to probably result in a number of workers won't be able to return to the Cape and Islands. Some businesses may have to open late, close early, may have to simplify their menus if they're a restaurant, or reduce the hours that they're open. So this could have a real domino effect on businesses and the tourist economy here in the Cape. Interesting as well, it was pointed out in the article that a lot of folks thought that the H-2B visa program might actually improve, since there are about 70 employed at Mar-a-Lago in Florida.
Yes, I know. And, you know, of course, this isn't the first time this has happened. The story points out the lobster pot, which felt this in years past with having to open later. And it's a big loss of revenue for, as we know, a short season and a critical season.
Right. And some of these workers have been coming year after year after year. So, as you said, there's a lot of them feel just like family, and they can't get back in.
And it's tough to find folks to fill in the meantime, too.
It is.
And there was a kind of following national news here. There was an executive order that mandates officials strike two regulations from the book for every one new regulation created. And local fisheries officials are saying that that could have some unforeseen impacts on fisheries management.
Right. Yeah, this was another executive order in January by the new president, saying agencies and departments, as you said, must rescind two existing regulations for every new one proposed. And some agencies may be easier than others. Fishing industry is very concerned about this because in the case of fisheries, a new regulation must be established yearly to open each fishery. Reason for this is new quotas need to be set, ground rules need to be established. So a search to find two to eliminate each time the fishery season begins is going to be very arduous, and I don't even know if it's possible. There's also a concern that there's a lack of specificity in the executive order. Does this mean that NOAA can establish a rule and then another agency can take two back, or does it have to be within the agency? So a lot of confusion here. And one attorney from a conservation legal agency called Earth Justice said he's confident that it's unconstitutional. So another case of something being done in Washington that's going to have a very, very important effect on the Cape.
Yeah, and for fishermen who are, I'm sure, wanting to get ready and understand what they need to know so that they can be, harvesting as much as they can,
but within
the confines of the law. So
right.
This will be something we'll definitely watch play out. On the phone right now is Ann Wood of the Provincetown Banner. Good morning, Ann.
Good morning, Catherine. Hi, Jeff. How's it going?
Good morning.
Great. Thanks for joining us. Some big news out of Provincetown this week. The town was the highest bidder in the first phase of an auction to buy a defunct timeshare complex.
It's true. On Valentine's Day, the town was one of three bidders that was chosen to go forward to a live auction in bankruptcy court that will happen later this month. But the town offered $8.1 million for the Harbor Hill condominium complex, which is basically a 1.2-acre property with four buildings on the west end of town with 26 apartments in it. And the second two bids that came in under it was a $7.5 million bid by LexBest Group, which is led by President and CEO Eric Shapiro, and three guys, developers, real estate guys, Thomas Kennedy, Ronald Rudnick, and John Chaluzzi, who bid $2.5 million.
The town had to act pretty quickly to get this all together, correct?
The town had to act super quickly to get it together because what happened was the state legislature in November, actually the governor signed a bill that allowed the town to start this year-round rental trust fund, which was enacted specifically for Provincetown, and it's the first one in the state that's happened this way, so the town could try to create medium-income housing for its residents. There's so many summer residents here, basically, really. I always say that millionaires are being pushed out by the billionaires in Provincetown who are buying up all of the houses and are only here a little bit, so that even people who earn between $47,000 and $107,000 a year can't find a place to live here. The town had to, once that legislation was enacted and they found out about this Harbor Hill condominium complex going into bankruptcy, it sort of had to do a quick turnaround and try to get a bid in there. Mm-hmm. And so far, so good. Mm. But we'll see.
Right, right. That actual auction is later this month. But then if the town is successful, it's not necessarily going to be the manager of this complex. It's just going to own the complex, right?
Yeah, it absolutely won't manage the complex. The town realizes that it has no ability. And especially since because this is solely funded by the town of Provincetown and its people, unlike affordable housing, first, we'll allow Provincetown residents in there, then town employees, then employees of the town, and then families with students who go to school in the town, which means that town employees, well, might be a lot of town employees living in this complex, so the town really can't have anything to do with it. So it's going to hire a management company to run the place and actually run the auction. We expect there's going to be a lot of people going for these 26 apartments, some of which have water views. I mean, it's going to be pretty amazing once it's all set up.
Mm,
but with the live auction, who knows what's going to happen.
Yeah.
The other guys can go way up on the bid, and the town has $12.5 million maximum to spend on the purchase and renovation. And the other bidders know that, so we'll see what happens. It's kind of up in the air.
Yeah, it will absolutely be interesting, and we'll be keeping an eye on it. We just have a few seconds, but a new group formed on the Outer Cape that's called Indivisible. It's modeling itself after a national movement.
Yeah, Indivisible Outer Cape. So about 70 people showed up at the library last Sunday, got together because they're basically fighting Trump and Trump, the Trump administration things. They're going to have Resistance Tuesday, where every Tuesday they're going to be do an act of resistance somehow against, you know, whatever act they decide to, whatever response they decide to have about one of Trump's policies in his first 100 days. And then they're going to have a Not My President's Day march in Boston on February 20th and the Ides of March. But the funny thing is they're also going to have an emotional support group. Well, funny to me. I just thought it was kind of cute. Where they'll have guided meditation and yoga and breathing exercises and maybe watch kitten videos to sort of lighten up the whole political atmosphere going on here in town. And if anybody wants to join, they're totally welcome. It's the next one's at 1:15 p.m. on Sunday, February 26th at the Provincetown Library.
Well, thanks so much for that update on happenings in Provincetown and the Outer Cape. That is Ann Wood of the Provincetown Banner. Have a great weekend.
You too. Take care.
With me in studio is reporter Jeff Spillane from the Cape Cod Times. Jeff, there were a cluster of news stories this week about marine life. Let's tackle the first one. There's been very few North Atlantic right whale births so far this year, and that has scientists worried.
Yeah, it certainly does. I mean, this is a story that that really kind of tugs at your heartstrings. This year, only three North Atlantic right whales were born, at least that scientists had monitored and had seen. They typically are. The calves are born off the Georgia and Florida coast. This is the lowest number of right whale births since 2000. Last winter, we had 14 babies. The year before that, 17. Scientists from Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution right here, they're acknowledging this is a bad calving season. Worried that this is a sign of decline. Right now, there's about 524 that we know of right whales that are out there. So not starting with a big number to begin with. So if births are down and unexpected deaths, which would include entanglements and boat strikes, are up, this could be a sign of trouble. And a lot of scientists are worried about this. One other thing that is interesting there is noticing that the interval between whale mothers giving birth has risen from 3 years to 7.7 years, and there were no first-time mothers this year, people are dumbfounded as to why this is happening. There's a couple reasons that are being out there that are being speculated. There may be some stress. The mothers may not be finding enough food. And one thing that I found very interesting, human forms of contraception may be getting into ocean waters and affecting the fertility of the mothers.
I know. I saw that, too, and thought of some of the work that organizations in the Cape, such as Silent Spring, have done to educate people about flushing medication down the toilet. But just what goes into our bodies comes out and does it could possibly have a bigger impact that we're not aware of right
now.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, it's a concerning story. Although I will say, you know, Beth Cassoni from the Lobstermen Association pushed back and said she's not sure that entanglement is such a big deal since the population has gone up slightly. But, you know, there is that cause for concern because the birth rate is lower this year.
Yes.
So another kind of marine news, the conch fishery. Officials are saying that while there aren't more fishermen entering into that specific industry, they've been harvesting more over the years, and they're now seeing some strain among the species.
They are. Conch has become a popular catch for local fishermen in the past decade, Catherine, largely because of the Asian export market and the demand. Price for this, it's also known as channeling whelk, has gone up from $1.07 a pound in 2005 to $3 a pound in 2015. Now we're finding out that it may have been a bit too popular in our waters. Species is now showing signs of decline. And Department of Marine Fisheries is now looking to increase the size of conch that can be taken in order to replenish the fishery.
Mm-hmm. And related, officials are also asking for help from conch fishermen because Nantucket Sound has the highest rate of turtle entanglements, leatherback turtle entanglements. Yep. And of course, that's an endangered species, so that's an issue there.
They are, yeah, very related. The popularity of conch fishing has also led to some deaths for leatherback turtles, three times more, as you had said, here in Nantucket Sound than anywhere else in Massachusetts. What happens is these leatherback turtles, these large turtles, get tangled up in the conch pots while they're trying to look for jellyfish. So one of the solutions that is being discussed is pulling the conch pots out in August, and this would avoid any type of trouble that could occur during the migration of these turtles into our waters. And I think that may be a solution that is going to be looked at very seriously. And it's also of a concern that some fishermen who are putting these conch pots out don't check them very often, whereas if someone checks them every day, they're likely to be able to save a turtle. So at a meeting in Buzzards Bay last week, the Department of Marine Fisheries told the fishermen, hey, if you don't favor the closure in August, then we need to come up with some type of solution.
Mm. And there was supposed to be another hearing on Nantucket, but that was postponed due to weather. So there's still a chance for folks to weigh in on this before the state puts together, possibly new regulations or advice for fishermen. On the phone with me, with us right now, is Sarah Brown with news from Martha's Vineyard. She's from the Martha's Vineyard Gazette. Good morning, Sarah. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Catherine. Hi.
Well, the Gazette did a moped survey to gauge whether there is support for vehicle on the island. There's been kind of a long ongoing discussion about moped use. So what did the Gazette find out?
Yeah, it's kind of always a hot topic here, and it's heating up again. And so, yeah, we did this survey for about 10 days earlier this month. And it was an online survey and, you know, not statistically valid or anything, but a glimpse of what people are thinking about this issue. There's a pretty big response. About 2,400 people responded, and we did have a mechanism in place to prevent multiple responses from the same computers. And it was pretty evenly divided between year-round residents and seasonal residents. And there was a pretty clear consensus that people do support the idea of eliminating moped rentals specifically. I think about 90% said they support eliminating moped rentals on the vineyard, if that's legally possible, which, you know, I should add, it's unclear whether it is legally possible. There have been a lot of efforts to curb rentals, and those have been unsuccessful, legally speaking. And about 69% said they support the idea of eliminating mopeds entirely, so even owning mopeds, so a bit smaller group there. What was interesting is, you know, few people said they had personal experience riding mopeds. I think 4% said that they or their family had been involved in a collision, and 11% said they'd ever even rented a moped. But more than half the people who responded said they or a family member had witnessed an accident or been involved, or I'm sorry, had witnessed an accident involving a moped, which is a big portion of the respondents, and they also, about half said the problem is extremely serious. So that's a glimpse at public opinion, and there's also some comments that we received that we ran with the story above people sharing their personal stories of seeing moped accidents, even witnessing fatal crashes, and how that kind of shaped some public opinion. So, you know, as this debate continues, and I think there's going to be perhaps some discussion at town meeting in Oak Bluffs, and certainly ongoing discussion in the community, is kind of a look at what people might be thinking.
A pulse right now on that issue.
Yeah.
Another news, a vineyard dog got an award of merit at Westminster this week. Tell us about
that. Yeah, it's really exciting. You know, there are a couple of vineyard dogs competing at Westminster, which is a pretty prestigious dog show. And maybe people are watching, you know, the Best in Show on Tuesday night. And one of the dogs is Mo. He's a 2.5-year-old Rottweiler from Edgartown, and he's owned by Sean Flynn and Rebecca Donnelly. And I should add, his full name is, if you're looking for him in the results, is Radio Ranch's Troublemaker. But he goes by Mo. He's a recent father.
He has a nickname. I love it.
Yes, he's a good nickname. He's a dock diving champ. But he, you know, he left the island last weekend, headed down to New York, and on Tuesday he competed along with other, you know, prize-winning Rottweilers in the breed competition to go on to compete, you know, in the best of group and best of show. Lots of people on the island were awaiting the results, and when all was said and done, he had an award of merit, as you said, kind of effectively third place, which his owners and everyone here was, you know, thrilled with. I know that Mo is planning a return to the, and his owners are planning a return to the show next year. So we'll see. Hopefully he'll continue his winning ways.
That's right. Now it's time for practice. They've got lessons learned for
exactly,
next year.
Exactly. Yeah. Have the first ones under the belt.
Well, thanks so much for the update, Sarah Brown of the Vineyard Gazette. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too.
And we have to take a break, but we'll be right back with the Point News Roundup in just a minute. Welcome back to the News Roundup on The Point. We're discussing the top local news stories of the week. I'm Catherine Ident, filling in for Sean Corcoran. And with me in the Woods Hole studio is reporter Jeff Spillane from the Cape Cod Times. Well, Jeff, it seems like not a week goes by when we don't have a story about what's going on at the Pilgrim Nuclear Power Plant. Pilgrim started to power up earlier this week after having to shut down due to last week's storm. The plant shut down as a precaution, but then they ran into some problems.
Yeah, they did, and it was shut down, as you said, last Thursday due to the storm. There was some additional problems. There was a leaking valve and a feed water system. That's a system that provides hot water to the reactor. So as a precaution right now, the plant is being kept at 20% power while it's being fixed. and it's being temporarily fixed now, but we'll have a more permanent fix again in April when it's closed down for refueling. Mm-hmm. But it has not been at 100% since the storm on February 6th.
That's right. And last week we were talking about an unrelated leak. So they've had several mm-hmm. leaks in the past few weeks.
Very much so.
And then the Nuclear Regulatory Commission issued a quarterly report. So they're in there. The inspectors are in there fairly often mm-hmm. for a variety of different types of inspections. And this latest report found 5 violations.
It did. This is for the fourth quarter of 2016. The NRC said that maintenance is becoming a big issue, a big problem at Pilgrim. They found everything from loose wires and valves to unexplained vibrations in key systems. And so this report, as I said, was the last quarter of 2016. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission and the owners of the plant said, well, you know, we're in the process of fixing those. Typically, by the time the report is public, we have these fixed. Now, this is not the results of the major inspection, which was done in December when 20 inspectors from the NRC came to Plymouth. That report, which is going to be very telling, will not be released until June. So That is something we're looking forward to as well.
Mm. And the NRC will be having a meeting, an assessment meeting in Plymouth in late March.
They will.
So yep. that's coming mm-hmm. up next month, but we won't see that full report for a while yet.
Yes.
And in Mashpee news, the Mashpee Wampanoag Tribe had elections and reelected some leaders that are very well known.
They
to
did.
A lot of people.
They did. This was a campaign dominated by economic issues and the opioid crisis. And Chairman Cedric Cromwell and Vice Chairman Jesse Baird retained their positions. Those are the two top positions in the tribe in very tight races. In fact, Baird only won by 4 votes, Chairman Cromwell by 60. So hardly a mandate there. There was 674 voters came from near and far, tribe members. Also a new treasurer, Gordon Harris, elected, and a new at-large tribal council member, David Whedon.
Mm. We're going to turn now to the Vineyard again. We have Cameron Machel from the Martha's Vineyard Times on the line. Good morning, Cameron.
Good morning.
Well, Oak Bluff selectmen are considering some pricey infrastructure projects. Tell us what's going on there.
Yes, Oak Bluff selectmen this week discussed some costly fixes to stabilize East Chop Bluff, renourish eroding town beaches, and expand a maxed-out wastewater treatment plant, all by 2020 with a $53 million price tag. The town will meet with state agencies in March to solicit state funds. They're also waiting to hear about a $200,000 grant from the Department of Conservation and Recreation. So construction could start in the fall, but it's likely it will begin in 2018 and be done in 2 phases.
And there's been an ongoing debate over a new field at the high school, whether or not to make it grass, as it's been, or to add turf. And it's really gotten a lot of debate. A lot of people have opinions about this.
Yes, the phrase turf wars has taken on a whole new meaning here on the Vineyard. It's a debate whether to replace the high school athletic fields with synthetic turf or natural grass, creating a centralized athletic facility at the high school. Some residents are opposing synthetic turf because of its potential health risks and environmental effects. But the high school committee did approve turf last May, and it's being reviewed by the Martha's Vineyard Commission currently. This week interviewed a random sample group of coaches and athletes, and they overwhelmingly supported turf. The debate continues.
But interesting to hear from some users of the field what they're thinking as another regulatory body takes a hard look at this.
Yes.
Well, thanks so much, Cameron. That's Cameron Machel of the Martha's Vineyard Times checking in with us. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Catherine.
With me in the studio is Jeff Spillane from the Cape Cod Times. A couple stories about veterans' issues in the paper this week. One out of Hyannis, where a business and condo complex is up for sale and a developer wants to make it a hub for veterans.
The Cape has 25,000, at least 25,000 veterans as residents here. And it was from a story I did recently. And it's believed to be the largest population of veterans per capita in the state. So that population got some good news here today. The Village Marketplace in Hyannis, if anybody's familiar with that, it's about a block north of Main Street. a group, a clustering of brick buildings, mixed-use retail apartments, etc., been largely empty over the past few years. It was purchased this week by a West Yarmouth man who plans to make it a hub for veteran services. The VA Outpatient Medical Center is already located in the complex, and the Cape and Islands Veterans Outreach Center will be moving there. So it looks as if this is going to be a big benefit for local veterans who typically have to go to either Providence, Brockton, or Jamaica Plain for a lot of services.
Mm. And in Yarmouth, officials there are putting three articles on spring town meeting warrant, also in an effort to help veterans who are residents in town.
We reported on it today that the town of Yarmouth is adding some articles for town meeting this May that would help disabled veterans with property tax exemptions. There are over 2,000 retired veterans in Yarmouth, and a lot of them are disabled. So the town is saying, you know, the least we can do is help you with your tax bills. So it looks as if the town will be making some moves on that at its town meeting in May.
Mm-hmm. And officials there saying that these changes could potentially really help veterans in town, but wouldn't have a big impact on town finances or tax increases.
That's right. It wouldn't, because then a lot of the money would be returned in the form of state funds.
Mm.
So it really wouldn't be a 100% of the loss for the town.
Mm-hmm. And other towns have already taken steps to do this as well. So Yarmouth wouldn't be the first one on the Cape.
That's right.
To do that. We had a couple school stories in the news over the week.
Oh, yeah.
Mashpee selectmen they're not very happy with a proposal to build a new Cape Tech Regional High School.
Oh, no.
And now they're talking about possibly pulling out of the district.
They are. The Mashpee Board of Selectmen were presented with a proposal for a new Cape Tech High School in Harwich. The superintendent of Cape Cod Tech came to the Board of Selectmen and said it's going to cost $18 million, your share, for this $141 million project. Now, only 60 students from Mashpee go there right now. The number is expected to decrease over the years. The Board of Selectmen, as well as the town manager, said, oh, wow, this is way too much money for us as we're looking at tightening our belt. So the selectmen this week proposed asking the state legislature to pull out of the district. Andrew Gottlieb, who is the chairman of the board of the Mashpee Selectmen, said that the price was just off the charts and unacceptable. Now, I am seeing, I do live in Mashpee, that there's a big move to get a lot of people at the next Board of Selectmen meeting who are big proponents of technical education and to tell the Board of Selectmen, hey, this isn't what we want. And what's going to happen here is there may be a town meeting article in May that would give the town approval. They'll petition the legislature to say, we want to have the ability to drop out of it. They're not saying they would, but that seems to be the way that they are moving.
And my understanding is that it's not necessarily a done deal. I mean, they voted to build that new building, but the membership towns, there are 12 towns that are part of this district, all need to approve of this, right?
They do. And the superintendent said, we could tighten our belts here. We might be able to get this down a little bit. Now, even if Mashpee, there's going to be a vote in all of the towns to move forward or not with this project, even if Mashpee decides they don't want to, if the other towns go for it, then it's a done deal. So this is not done by any means.
Mm. And of course, the vote to build the new school, as you said, $141 million. But officials did look at renovating the existing school, which is more than 40 years old, and the price tag for that was high in the 120s and the $130 million. So. It looks like no matter what, the schools that are part of or the towns that are part of this district are looking at a big price tag.
Oh, it's going to be a big price tag. And I think that what they thought, Catherine, was, hey, if we're going to pay that much to renovate this school, then why not build a new one? And of course, a lot of What has happened at Cape Cod Tech needs to be modern technology in the shop. So it is a pricey proposition.
Yeah. In Sandwich, a private entity or a nonprofit entity wants to build a school for children with disabilities on 6A. It's faced some opposition, but a regional historic board recently gave approval for that project to go forward.
Yeah, it did. And this was a very contentious meeting this week, Catherine. This is a new school that has did receive approval from the Old Kings Highway District Commission, the Regional District Commission. It is being proposed, it's going to be called Anchor Academy for 11 special needs students, very close to where the Riverview School is. It's another special needs school on Route 6A in Sandwich. It was met with some sharp, and I'm going to say caustic, criticism from neighbors. One of the neighbors said that, in addition to there being concerns it doesn't fit into the architecture of the historic district, said that he's scared that Route 6A is turning into a handicapped way and he may have to buy a gun to protect his property because some of the students who may suffer from drug and alcohol issues may be going into the woods and his property.
Ooh, those are some strong
words.
That's
pretty
harsh. Some strong words there. And I understand, though, there is room for another appeal, so this isn't necessarily a done deal.
That's right. Mm.
Turning now, we're going to look at some Falmouth news. We've got Ryan Bray, a reporter from the Falmouth Enterprise, on the phone. Good morning, Ryan. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah. Hey, how are you?
I'm good. The 300 Committee is seeking some money to buy a kind of an iconic farm that may no longer it's essentially on the market to be sold.
Yeah. So it was about a month ago, early January, the Andrews family, who's owned Tony Andrews Farm since 1925 and has kind of built out that property over the years, or, purchased adjacent land to the farm over the years, put the 60 acres of property up for sale. And, 300 Committee voted on February 7th, the Board of Directors, to request selectmen to go forward with a special town meeting in April, specifically so they can put an article to town meeting voters requesting money for a down payment that would allow them to basically begin negotiations potentially to purchase the property.
Mm-hmm. Big piece of property, and it's. I feel like a lot of Cape Codders have an emotional tie to that property because it's been that farm for so long, and a lot of people kind of grew up going there. So
yeah, absolutely. And Jessica Rittenauer, the administrator for the 300 Committee, said as much. I mean, a lot of the forward momentum that's sort of started here toward putting the article together and by the land was really driven by kind of an overwhelming community reaction. A lot of phone calls, a lot of emails, a lot of feedback, just urging the 300 Committee to kind of get involved and make a play for the property. But so it all starts with this article in April. They haven't determined a figure yet how much they'll ask for, but assuming that gets approved, they'll begin putting together a plan for how they'd want to use the property. They want to retain the farm. They'd like to see, keep it in operation. There are additional parcels near what's called Pond 14 that they want to protect as open space. They've talked about, the potential for including plans for affordable housing on the property. So there's a lot of things that still need to be worked out. And then, last but not least is, how they're going to finance it. So still a long way to go, but definitely interesting that they're, want to make a play for the land.
That's right. Well, Ryan Bray, thanks so much for checking in with us on that story. Ryan Bray of the Falmouth Enterprise. Have a great weekend.
Okay, you too.
And we just have a few seconds left, but there was a lawsuit filed by a Sandwich woman this week, Jeff Spillane of the Cape Cod Times, suing Howard Stern and the IRS. Tell us really briefly.
Yeah, this is something that has a lot of people shaking their heads. There's a woman from Sandwich named Judith Barigas who actually was making a call to talk about a tax liability and was talking with an IRS agent about, I would imagine, payment and why she owes money. Turns out that call in 2014, it wasn't very private. It was actually broadcast live on the Howard Stern Show to 1.2 million listeners. This, of course, caused quite a concern for Ms. Barrigas. She has filed a lawsuit in U.S. District Court in Boston this week. She is claiming that it has left her in a frantic and high anxiety state. She's received hundreds of harassing phone calls and can't eat, sleep, or find employment. Needless to say, the IRS agent who did that has been relieved of his duties.
Interesting story. We are out of time. Thank you so much, Jeff Spillane of the Cape Cod Times, for coming into our studios today. Thanks to our other contributors, Ryan Bray of the Falmouth Enterprise, Sarah Brown of the Vineyard Gazette, Tim Wood from the Cape Cod Chronicle, Ann Wood from the Provincetown Banner, and Cameron Machel from the Martha's Vineyard Times. And I want to thank you for listening. I'm Catherine Ident, and for Sean Corcoran.
The Friday News Roundup is produced by Sean Corcoran. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.